BJ Armstrong's back with us. Time now for Darnell's question of the day. All right, take it away, homeboy.
Yes, sir. Let's move to the Staples Center, where thousands of fans showed up today to honor Kobe and Gigi Bryant with a memorial service. Their sudden death last month sent shockwaves across the sports world and beyond. And as you guys know, Kobe's my favorite player of all time. So I want to ask you about his legacy. 20 years from now, when I say the name Kobe Bryant, what will be your strongest memory?
I'm going to remember the helicopter crash. That will be first in my mind. It's to see a young person taken away this early, particularly when they were just blossoming in their post-career life, and for him to die in service to his daughter, with his daughter, and his daughter passing away. It's one of, because like Michael Jackson dies, I really don't think about how he died. I think about his music and the art and all of that. But this is kind of like Tupac dying. I think about him getting killed in Vegas. That's the first thing I think about. And with Kobe, the first thing the helicopter crash and just the tragic way his life ended well before he was done creating his legacy.
Yeah, mine is twofold because they both hit me in different phases of my life, but they both hit me hard. One is the fact, like you said, the finality, he didn't get to live his life. And I know a lot of people out there like, he's Kobe Bryant, he's an icon, we saw him on the basketball court. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about live his life. That was the sacrifice. That was to build into who he was in greatness to now give that in baton to his wife and his kids, his daughters, and then to spread his love throughout the family to let that grow generational wealth beyond just riches. He ain't get a chance to do that fully because of the commitment. This is my second point. Seeing Kobe when he first got to Los Angeles and that commitment that was met with resistance, met with really like resentment, because he was so committed so fast that other players, peers, teammates, media was like, this kid is on one. Like, relax, grow into the role of being great, not just saying I am great and I'm going to show you in every single way. So you saw it happen, 180s in his personal life and the way he socialized. Kobe went all in. It wasn't just the hours in the gym, it was the mindset of my craft is most important. Very few, if any, athletes I remember putting their craft that high on the pedestal like he did.
Yeah, you know, I have so many thoughts. It still seems like an unreal moment every time I think about this. This is definitely a moment that I'll remember where I was exactly at when, you know, I received the call and people started notifying me and my phone started ringing. You know, I'll always have an everlasting memory of Kobe Bryant, his rookie year, when he shot those air balls versus the Utah Jazz. And I saw a young man then who was able to overcome his fears and walk into this fear of not knowing whether he's going to be successful or not. And that had a moment for us, because as an athlete, you have to overcome so many things. And he walked into it. He walked into it as a young player. He did it as a player when he was performing. And then you saw how he made that transition once the air came out of the ball. Mm-hmm. And this young man had so much going, not only for himself on the court, off the court, but he was able to attack those. And he attacked it with a relentless effort that I think all former athletes, but people in general, because every life is about making transitions. And you saw how he was making transitions from one phase of his life to another. And we watched this young man grow up as 18, you know, from when he came in the league as 18 until when he retired in the game. And so many, you know, we always refer to him in the basketball family as the middle child, because your father grew up watching Kobe Bryant and you grew up as a kid watching him. And he was always in the middle. For 20 years, he played in the NBA.
Darnell, I wanted to give you a chance to. What are you going to remember?
Yeah, for me, man, obviously the basketball court kind of spoke for itself. So for me, it's his mindset, as we call it the Mamba mentality. No matter what his focus was, whether it was on the court, whether it was coaching his girls, whether it was writing children's books, he's coming at it full force, 110 miles per hour. And that mentality is something we all can live by, no matter what your profession is, no matter what you do on a day-to-day basis. Going 100% in whatever your focus or your dream is, something I think we can all attest to. So,
all right, I'm speaking in real time, so I want people to be forgiving if I misspeak here. But I was literally just thinking about a tragedy and people being taken out before their legacies are finished. And so I'm going to analogize, or the dichotomy of that is JFK. I think of his assassination. Martin Luther King, I think of his accomplishments. Mm. Both of them assassinated, tragically, well before their time was up. Yeah. But I think about MLK's accomplishments. I think about JFK's tragic death.
It's interesting. I can see how that plays mentally with you because, like you said, Kobe being a middle child, a lot of us were raised as Kobe yes. was our guy. And then no matter how much you were consumed with his basketball greatness and you saw his transition, you're like, oh, I think the highlights are in front of him, not behind him. And then this as a finality, it's so abrupt before his time. And it really reminds everyone, this moment is all you got. And I think Kobe and his greatness, I was looking forward to him shining greater light on the athlete being more than right. an athlete without having to be a t-shirt or a mantra. It's just, watch this. Everything I do is going to be gold. And he didn't get that chance.
Yeah, I mean, he was the one player that all of the old guys, our generation, respected him. And then you can see the love and how he connected with the young players, how they all looked up to him.
Revered.
Yeah. We revered him. And he had this, he was right in the middle, you know, the Jordans and the LeBrons.
Yeah.
And he was right there, and he was he kind of mended
the glue
for all of us.
Whitlock and Wiley, LeVar Arrington and Orlando Scandrick are back. Let's move to the NFL Combine, where Joe Burrow is drawing a lot of attention, and not just for his small hands.
Itty-bitty hands.
The Heisman winner said he wouldn't be throwing at the combine, and the QB was very direct when asked if he would play for the Bengals if they drafted him first overall.
I'm not going to not play. I'm a ball player. Whoever picks me, I'm going to go show up. You know, the only thing that I've said is I just didn't want to be presumptuous about the pick, and so that's why I've been noncommittal, because I don't know what's going to happen. You know, they might not pick me. They might fall in love with someone else. So, you guys kind of took that narrative and ran with it, but there's never been anything like that from my end.
All right. I think Burrow really wants to play for the Bengals.
Let me answer it like the millennials, like my daughter would. He really wants to play for the Bengals, but he doesn't really, really want to play for the Bengals. And there's a big difference I'm learning from these kids. The more real he's on it, the more real it is, right? He really wants to play in the NFL. He really wants to be the number one pick, but he doesn't really, really want it to be Cincinnati. So he's too confident, too articulate to tap dance like that. We've seen it, and he's learning a harsh lesson in being an NFL savvy veteran at that podium. He's starting to learn that lesson fast, like make declarations even if they're going to rub some people the wrong way. Because I think before, he was trying to play that negotiation out. I have leverage. What prospect has ever said leverage in the prospect of going to the draft and to the combines? I've never heard leverage until there's a contract and there's negotiations. But when you're trying to audition, you're talking leverage. That let me know that he doesn't deep down want to go there, but he's going to be there.
I used leverage in my conversations leading up to the draft.
Oh, did you?
But it was a different day and age back then. I told Cleveland, it's the black hole. I'll never show up here without quarterback money.
That's why I'm saying he didn't say that, but then he says, I'm using leverage.
But I like,
say what you say.
I like his approach to this, though. I really do. I like how he kept it kind of open-ended and stayed in a humble manner about it. And, you know, look, no one wants to play for a losing team. Nobody wants to take and go to a losing team, especially with a track record of not really being able to win. You waste your greatest years being able to play on trying to figure out how to win.
I like that challenge, though.
Right?
I'd rather go somewhere and light the torch than carry the torch. Me, personally. I'd rather go somewhere that, I'm going to make impact. I like that challenge. I don't.
When I chose the college I went to, I wanted to go and win a national title.
How'd that go?
We came close.
How'd that go?
It was ranked one. I mean,
thank you.
Only one team can win it.
Well, then
only
what's your point?
So you got a chance.
So you can go somewhere else and make if that I team go, that situation. Kansas City hasn't won in 50 years. Now they won in Super
Bowl. You're not looking at it from a realistic perspective a realistic perspective is most teams in college will not be able to compete for a national title.
We're off track. Oh, we're off track. I said
but
close.
The point is, I don't
Orlando
look at Cincinnati's going to be
Let's
able
go.
To do
Let's
it either.
The Burrow really wants to play for the Bengals.
I think he really wants to play for the Bengals from what he's saying because he's close to home, but he's also leaving it open and saying, but I wouldn't be mad if I played for somebody else. But, I mean, if you just read his quotes, that's a 2-hour drive home. I can go see my family. He can go see all his friends. He's a hometown hero. Who don't want to be a hometown hero? Same. I just heard, you know, we hear all this thing about Kobe and, you know, rest in peace, you know, bless his soul. And just the impact that he made on Los Angeles. And he's not even from here. If Joe Burrow comes and just does a tenth of what Kobe Bryant did or a tenth of what anybody else, you're looking at him possibly being top Bengals of all time.
Those two letters number in the Raptors. A lot of people in.
Joe Burrow wants to be the number one pick in the draft. That's his goal.
That's what he wants.
He wants to be the number one pick in the draft. He doesn't want to be a Cincinnati Bengal. I think his comments today were perfect for perhaps creating a scenario where he can get out of being in Cincinnati. If he comes out right now and says, I want out of here, it lowers his trade value.
Yes, it does.
If he seems...
Trade value? When was the last time y'all seen a quarterback on a rookie deal traded? Not named Jimmy Garoppolo. That was a backup.
Eli Manning, I'm just saying.
They traded the top pick. He's not even going to make it to the team.
Right. They traded... Again, in order for the Bengals to have the most leverage and value, get the most value if they do decide to trade him. Look, he could be sitting... The Bengals may not... be totally in love with Joe Burrow.
He said that.
They said you're a betting man.
He said that.
What's that?
They said you're a betting man.
Yeah, no, but I'm not going to make a bet on this. He's likely going to go to the Bengals. They got the number one pick. It's hard to make trades and all that. But does he want to play for the Bengals? No. I think he wants to go to Carolina and play for his passing game coordinator at LSU, Joe Brady.
What pick is that?
I think they got the 6th or 7th. They would have to trade up for
it. And maybe they'll try. But I think that that's the point that you're making.
Yeah.
If everybody plays their role the way they're supposed to play their role, then you may have an opportunity to get a suitor that would actually make the move to get to that number one pick. If he's saying, I don't want to play in Cincinnati right now, then now you're setting the stage where Cincinnati's like, okay, this is what we want. This is what I want. This is what I want. Right. If you want Joe Burrow so bad, this is what you're going to give me. But if he plays the game the way he's supposed to, which was made it a great interview, then now Cincinnati is forced to look at it from, we don't know if he wants
to
be here.
But it's not just for Cincinnati. It's forcing other teams. Look, if they felt like the guy wanted out of there, you're going to offer Cincinnati less, and Cincinnati's less likely to trade the pick.
That's the other side of it.
He's protecting his value, his trade value, by saying what he said today. Again, I do agree with him.
Why are we sitting up here acting like the Carolina Panthers are in a better position?
He's got his passing game
in a better position than the
college
Cincinnati
coach he
Bengals.
Just went. They just hired the Carolina Panthers.
I didn't.
Look, I can tell you why. Mike Brown's the cheapest owner in all of professional sports.
It's a great David thing that Tepper, number one contract is
David Tepper
in,
is the richest man in the NFL. Mike Brown has never hired a general manager. They haven't won a playoff game since 1991.
Well, we ever talked since about he their winning percentage.
Over as, ever since he took over as general manager and team owner, Mike Brown, they haven't won a playoff game since. The Bengals have been a black hole of football, and I know Marvin Lewis elevated them, and they had some success. Marvin Lewis is gone. What do they do? They turn
back.
Yeah,
but they also have the 6 most wins in the AFC in the last decade. Let's not
under Marvin Lewis. Under Marvin Lewis,
I lose value in a prospect that doesn't want this challenge. So if I'm Cincinnati internally, I'm looking at Joe Burrow less right now because I'm like, oh, it doesn't sound like he fully embraces this challenge. Now, not everybody wants to raise their hand because they have leverage and don't want that challenge. But me, I understand picking your college. Picking your pro team makes me always pause. Even though it's worked out before, I still pause at somebody and still drafting them when I know that they had some temper expectations in terms of, do I really want this?
Whitlock and Wiley, joined now by Fox NBA analyst Rick Bucher and Yahoo Sports senior NBA insider Chris Haynes. All right, let's move to the NBA, where LeBron had a huge night against Zion Williamson and the Pelicans last night. Showing the rookie, he still got it, dropping 40 points in a win and celebrating with some red vines at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
LeBron has had a fantastic season, but he's still trailing Giannis Antetokounmpo in the MVP race. But both guys are putting up big numbers, with Giannis edging LeBron in points, rebounds, and shooting percentage, while LeBron leads the NBA in assists and is shooting better from three. All right, we've asked this before, but we'll ask it again. Think LeBron can catch Giannis in the MVP race?
I still don't think he can. I don't think he's as motivated as Giannis to get the MVP. I think he's going to die on the shield, on the sword of a title, but not as an MVP. His minutes are down from last year, which was career low in minutes. So he's doing his own version of load management. And on defense, he's better this year, but still picks his time. Dribble slower than the average point guard, bringing it up to kind of conserve himself. And it's a shared experience with AD. LeBron, at times, is not the best player on his team, even though he's LeBron, the greatest player we have right now. So, no, I don't think he's fully motivated.
I disagree with that.
Yeah, I do, too.
You do? Oh, y'all think?
He's the best player on his team.
He's better than AD?
Yeah, oh, okay. Every night.
Well, I watch a lot of games. Every night?
Every night.
Every night?
Even on his off nights.
Even
on his off nights.
Now, this year. I think the Lakers had no AD last year, and they had LeBron, and they were in no way in this position that they are now. I think AD is not getting – that's my point. It's a shared experience. So you're going to say, oh, I think it's AD. No, I think it's LeBron. That's the problem. That's why he won't MVP.
I'll go you one better. He's a better player than Giannis Antetokounmpo.
Who's this?
AD? LeBron James.
Oh, my God.
All the things that LeBron does, and this is why I do believe that he has a chance of winning MVP. Now, the Lakers are going to have to make this a race for the best record. I've done this long enough that I know how the voters look at things. And they, when it gets this close, they start to look at numbers. Mm. And how do the respective teams do? It may not have anything to do with it, but the reality is that becomes a factor. And then they go down the list of where their statistics are. Everything's close, but I got to take a look at LeBron James leading the league in assists and how that makes the rest of that team better and what we thought of that team at the beginning of the year. Mm. So if the Lakers can make this a race for the best record, then certainly LeBron has a chance. He's on the outside looking in, but I cannot close the door on the possibility of him winning it.
I agree. And I think we have to not dismiss how important the last impression is. When I'm talking about down the stretch, what happened? I remember 2017, the year Russell Westbrook won MVP. For most of the year, I was telling people I was going to vote for James Harden. I even told some of the Rockets officials I was voting for James Harden. Then Russ, with the last 2 weeks, just went on a tear, you know, the triple doubles, but he was hitting game winners. The last impression, I gave my vote to Russ. Of course, some Rockets officials, they were mad at me, rightfully so. What I mean by that is, like, Milwaukee, they've been in cruise control all season long. They don't get a lot of buzz, you know? And so the Lakers, they're going to be on everybody's radar all the time, even the media. So if LeBron and the Lakers string away some big wins down the stretch, I don't even think necessarily even catch Milwaukee for the best record in the NBA. Right, right. But
make
if they
close.
Can, yeah, just make it close. Last impression, I think he has a shot.
I'm not sure if LeBron has to do any more than what he's done so far this season. If he just finishes this out, and they're within four games of Milwaukee in terms of record. Because, again, at some point, somebody's going to say, look, man, the West is harder. It's a better division. He's been playing tougher competition. And then the other thing, the reason why I think he can catch him and why I agree with Rick, he's a better player. Everything I see LeBron do, even last night, I go, you know what? He can do that in the postseason as well. his impact will be immense in the postseason against every opponent. When I watch Giannis, I just go, well, we'll wait to see the postseason and see what that really looks like. And I'm just at that experience. And that's why last night was important. He was effective against Toronto last night, led him to a victory. But the stench of the Toronto series from last year is still in my mind. I think it'll be in voters' minds. You can trust what you see from LeBron. It shows up in June, May, it'll show up in October if they played in October. With Giannis, I'm not so sure.
Well, Giannis is working on that fadeaway. Giannis is working on that turnaround, and it's working because Milwaukee found out, oh, Giannis, oh, a little less. 19-19 went out there and beat Toronto in Toronto. Here's the thing. Let's talk about AD, what he brings to this team, and the blocks, which leads to defense, which is why the Lakers really are better this year because defensively they're so long and it's just the rim protection. Anthony Davis is leading that charge, who is also the leading candidate probably for Defensive Player of the Year, along with Giannis, depends on how you want to play it. So we always lean offensive, and we talk about LeBron being the best player. Mm. We never think about why this team is really better this year. Mm-hmm. And it's not because of just offensive production, and LeBron leads the league in assists. I respect that. Here's the thing. Giannis has better numbers this year than he did when he won the MVP last year, and his team is better this year. And y'all trying to say he ain't going to win the MVP this year? I want to hear the logic. Anybody?
We didn't say he's going to win.
Oh, okay.
I'm
going to tell you why. It's all because of the Toronto series in the postseason. To me, what happened to him in that series, tainted his MVP.
That's prejudice right there. Well, that's not a part of the voting consideration.
You're right.
That's
prejudice right there. But the reality is, all those things factor in. Yep. You can say it shouldn't be. You can say you need to look at it through a prism. But the reality is, voters look at it, and they don't want the embarrassment of going back to Dirk Nowitzki, winning MVP, and then getting knocked out in the first round, where everybody looks at it and says, well, we got this wrong. They want to know that they're voting for the guy. It may be a regular season award, but the guy who's going to have a chance of being standing at the end of the day.
The other thing, Marcellus, with us all being journalists or whatever, we love narrative and story. And LeBron's story is better than Giannis's story. It's
this year, or are you talking about in totality?
This year and damn near every year.
But, all right, I give you totality, okay, but this year?
Okay, all right, even
a guy who can get over the hump and his success leads to championship success?
Listen to what he says. This year, do most people talk about Milwaukee?
No.
That's part.
What year
part,
do they ever talk about Milwaukee?
But especially now, because the feeling is that, look, We've seen this before.
Yeah,
we saw this last year.
They
basically got swept out by Toronto in that series. So
you vote for LeBron, and then guess what? They get swept out by the Clippers.
No,
like, what's the difference?
But the narrative, again, to go back to the narrative, we've never seen what LeBron is doing. At his age, in this deep, no one, I'm just saying.
Here we go with this
Drew Brees MVP Legacy Award.
When you go back to the narrative, I'm just telling you.
Here we go.
The Kobe Bryant tragedy plays into this. LeBron, the Lakers are, and I came into this season just like you, thinking the Clippers were going to be the story in the NBA. Mm-hmm. LeBron and the Lakers have overshadowed all of that. This season has been about the Lakers.
Yes.
When people think about this season, it's the Lakers, Kobe. Hand the MVP to LeBron. He's in year 17. He's put up incredible. Look, man, I was very skeptical. Didn't think. I'm the guy that says the Hollywood James experiment's not going to work. I'm hoping the Clippers bail me out on that, but it don't look promising. LeBron and the Lakers have it going on, and it wouldn't shock me if the voters. Again, it was no different. Steve Nash got MVPs off of narrative over Shaquille O'Neal when Shaquille was clearly better.
Yeah.
LeBron's got a hell of a narrative.
Don't make me nerd out up here because we count all the counting numbers, the easy ones, rebounds, and assists, and points. Where LeBron still loses to AAD in two of those three categories. But then let's get deeper. PER, win shares. Who you think is having more impact on the Lakers? Oh, it gets quiet again. It's not even the LeBron James. Yeah. The shared experience, I think you guys are really minimizing. That's going to, outside of L.A. borders, they're going to think, oh, AD's there too, which robs LeBron a little bit, and then Giannis.
I just want to ask you, I'm not trying to nitpick.
Just go.
But are you thinking in the minds of the voters?
No, of course not. You know me.
So, again, that's what I'm saying.
I'm not talking about last year when I'm voting this year.
But I'm thinking in the minds of voters, and I just think.
I know. I agree with you.
You can go and look. And they have all those stats and numbers, but I just don't think people are going to be sitting there going, well, he shared it with AD, and AD's a big part of the deal. And maybe AD was better than him 35 or 40 of the games. Blah, blah, blah. They're going to sit there and go, damn, LeBron James is dominating the league.
At that age. I'm old when I'm voting. So the voters are old and they're going
to
get straight.
I have a confession to make. So let me say, I am thinking about the narrative of how I think other voters
are
going to
vote.
I am a voter.
Oh,
but
let's
I'm going to say this, just to make it clear. I do think so far Giannis is the MVP, and I think it's his to lose. But I would say, it was just a little personal note. Giannis is Giannis' girlfriend, Mariah Riddlesprigger. That's my cousin. Both from Fresno. So, you know, they just had a child. So that's my little cousin right there. Mm. So I want to make this clear, Giannis. I'm not saying LeBron should get the MVP. I'm just saying that it's a long season. That's all I'm saying.
It is too long.
Go ahead.
I'm
glad I made that clear. That's
Chris
all.
Shane's taking that's care of personal business right here. Let me just
that's
tell
it. That's all I wanted.
What just happened here?
That podcast interview.
Come on, cuz.
Come on, cuz. Gone.
Time now for Darnell's question of the day. Take it away, Darnell, my man.
Yes, sir. Let's talk about Steph Curry.
Okay.
Who has been out since he broke his hand back in October and was reportedly expected back on Sunday against the Wizards. But yesterday, Steve Kerr said Steph might need more time and that there still was no timetable for him to return. At this point, the Warriors have 24 games left and they have the NBA's worst record, Wanted to ask you guys, is it worth the risk for Steph to come back at all this year?
For me, yes. It's always been, it's not worth the risk. I've always questioned this. Now, I understand and had a chance to be around Steph and know that in Steph's mindset is he has to come back because Draymond and Kevon and those guys have been in the trenches and they're playing with this team that's not a good team going nowhere. As the leader of this team, it's important to show that he's not just there for the good times. That, hey, you know what? I know it's not fun, but I'm going to come back and I'm going to be part of this with you. Now, I get all that. But it smells a lot like the Kevin Durant decision in terms of if you're really leaving it up to the player, of course he wants to play. But is it the smartest thing in the big picture? Okay, so you want to prove that you're that kind of leader? Steph, we already know you're that kind of leader. The risk simply isn't worth the reward. What are you possibly getting out of him coming back and playing this last month?
You know, so long as he's fully healthy, and I've been given every indication that they're not going to rush him back if he's not fully 100%, I think it is worth the risk. Now, people are going to be like, oh, well, what about the lottery odds? Look, the Warriors are so down in the standings that I don't think that's going to make much of a difference, number one. And number two, I say this with full respect to Steph Curry. He's a great player, but there's going to be a process for him to get his timing down and for all the supporting guys to adjust to him that they'll probably lose games anyway. So I think there is value in him being able to build off some rhythm, knock some rust down that can carry over into next season and give some data to Warriors GM Bob Myers in the front office of how does everyone look around Steph, guys like Eric Paschal, Jordan Poole, et cetera.
I think it's worth the risk. This is not a leg injury, a knee injury that he's coming back from. And I think we have to remember this, that just because he returns, we're talking about load management.
Right.
I think they'll be load managing him the rest of the season. He's not going to come back and play every single game. Yeah. And so with that being said, to your point, Mark, then I don't think they're going to make up ground and mess up their lottery odds. And look, Steve Kerr came on my pod a couple weeks ago, and he said he feels like they owe it to the fans of San Francisco.
Okay.
This is what he said.
To
have them, you know.
You're telling me that it's not we owe it because they're paying $1,000 a ticket because we're in the new Chase Center.
They owe it to the fans.
Okay, but I saw Steph at the beginning of the year. Mm-hmm. They were getting run. I saw them 54-19 in the second quarter against the Phoenix Suns before Steph got hurt.
Yeah, like, that's a good point.
He can come back and play. It's not going to change the entertainment value of whether the Warriors are competitive.
Time out, hold on. I totally disagree. Have you seen this product on the floor? This is for the Warriors?
Okay, maybe I have to amend that a little bit. It's not, no. Let me put it this way. Yeah, it's not going to raise the entertainment value enough for the risk value that's involved. And I hear you in terms of getting his rhythm back and sort of getting a feel for next season. And that would make sense to me if we didn't have the Olympics this summer. Mm-hmm. And if he wasn't going to get an opportunity to go to their training camp and be able to get his game going, because let's be honest. I mean, all right, so he gets to play with Eric Paschal a little bit. But how many guys on this roster right now that he's going to be on the floor with are going to get any meaningful time next year if this team really is where they want it to be? That's where this whole idea, like, we're building toward next year. You got training camp. You got a brand new team next year, hopefully. Otherwise, this isn't going to be that much different.
Yeah, I think there's points to be made on both ends, and I totally understand it. But I think that the Warriors are evaluating Steph Curry similarly with how they were evaluating Klay Thompson, where they decided Klay Thompson is not going to be back this season because he's not recovered enough, and it would lead to further damage. So I think that that's the same kind of model they're viewing Steph, where with his specific injury, he's made more progress, therefore they're more optimistic that he'll be able to at least play a few games.
Rick, I want to jump in real quick. At the end of the day, Steph Curry brought this up earlier this year.
Yeah.
You can't go in with the mindset that, hey, I might get hurt. We understand anytime you step on that court, you might get hurt.
Yeah.
But if he's 100% healthy, go out there and play.
Okay, but
Why not?
And to give you a little pushback on you that it's not a leg injury, he had two surgeries on this hand. Mm-hmm. He's told us there was nerve damage in there. Like, that he's going to be 100%. And keep in mind, you're also playing at a time where everybody's in condition. Everybody's playing at a different speed. It's not his shooting hand, it's his offhand. Mm-hmm. Like, there's a lot of reasons that I could give you that, okay, let's go and try it and play it. But again, if I look at risk versus reward, I'm like, nah, let me be 110%.